Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, September 23rd. I'm Ray Graff. Say, is your vehicle making a noise you can't explain? Is there a small puddle of a viscous substance in your driveway under your car? Is that check engine light going on? Well, fear not, friends, because Gordon Fricke is on the line to answer your automotive repair and maintenance questions. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke in Hoosick Falls, New York, and he knows about cars. If you have a car or truck, call now. It gets very popular on this program when Gordon's in the house or even on the line. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Gordon Fricke and your car questions coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff on the program to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions today. None other than Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years. If you have a question about your car or truck, give us a shout. 800-348-2551. Don't shout, though. Nice and calm, measured tones. Otherwise, Zach, the engineer, gets a little upset. Nice, calm, inside-speaking voice. 800-348-2551 is our number. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. I'd best to call early if you want to get in. Gordon's advice is coveted among our listeners. Gordon Fricke, welcome back.
Thanks, Ray. Nice to be back.
Beautiful weather for a drive. And, you know, you mentioned to me before the show started that you're seeing a preponderance of brake issues because people aren't driving their cars during the lockdown or hadn't been for some time.
Yes, yes. Right after the, or even during the lockdown and afterwards, we were seeing so many very, very rusted brake rotors, caliper pins, just all the stuff having to do with the brakes from not being used, and mainly cars that sat outside. So you had rain, changes of weather, humidity. We're still seeing it now because some of those brake surfaces rusted so badly that even putting the cars and trucks back in use didn't clean them up, and we're seeing lots and lots of rusty brakes.
I mean, you know, and you and I have talked about this before. You've been on so many times now since many people have started working from home and not going out much. I mean, if it was Gordon Fricke's car and he was home every day, which I know you haven't been, but if you were home, how often would you drive your vehicle just to keep it limbered up?
I know. I get that question a lot, and I have some people that say it's just not practical. I don't have anywhere to go. I don't need to go. I don't want to go. Ideally, the car likes to be driven daily. That way it starts, it runs, it reaches operating temperature. You've applied the brakes a bunch of times and everything is fine. The tires are not sitting in their same spot for weeks on end.
Yeah.
But if you can't, you can't. But definitely every once a week, a vehicle really should go out on a substantial ride, enough to fully warm it up and use everything, you know, the brakes, the steering, air conditioning, heating, everything, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have one email here, and then we'll hit the phones. This one came in before the show started. This is from Matt. Matt says, I have a 2018 Toyota Camry. I brought it in last October for the final free oil change and checkup. It had 13,000 miles on it. It now has 16,200 miles on it since it's been a year. Do you think I should bring it in for another oil change and checkup, even though I haven't put on the full 5,000 miles they suggested I have at the next oil change? Would it be bad if I waited until spring to bring it in?
Yeah, very good question. And definitely don't wait till spring because there's the time factor versus the mileage factor. And under ideal conditions, let's say you didn't drive the car and it was in a garage that was at a fairly constant temperature, not outside. Yeah, you could go quite a long time that way. But intermittent use, it starts, it shuts off, it doesn't get driven a lot. The oil gets contaminated. There's moisture in the crankcase that doesn't ever get evacuated. It doesn't steam out or get taken through the intake.
Yeah.
Now you're going to go into winter, which is even worse. So no, he definitely should do another service.
Okay.
This fall, you know.
All right, Matt, thank you for that email. The number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's Cars and Trucks today, and we start out with Jim in Peru, Massachusetts. Jim.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 2004 Chevy Blazer, and like 9 or 10 months ago, I changed the plugs, the wires, the distributor cap, and rotor. And about 2 months ago, whenever it rained or for like a day after it rained, it wouldn't start. It would turn over and maybe chug a couple times or maybe backfire. But like today I went out and it started and ran fine.
Yeah. You know, it's definitely a moisture situation. Blazers of that vintage, I had one. Ray has one.
Yeah.
It more than likely is your ignition coil. That still has a single coil system. And you can test that pretty easily yourself. If you locate the ignition coil, which is going to be the center wire that comes out of the distributor cap, follow it to the ignition coil, which on a 04 Blazer is to the passenger side of the throttle unit. And if you take a mister, like you'd spray plants with or ironing your clothes, you know, a mister.
Yeah.
Fog or spray that coil and the wiring around it, and then go in there and start the vehicle, if it even starts, or better yet, have somebody else crank it while you're out there watching, and you might see some spark jumping all over the place. And it's very possible that coil has gotten very weak and the spark's escaping. And the water's helping it. It's making a better connection for it. That'd be my first stop on that complaint.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I think that'll be a lot of fun.
Jim, thanks. Are you being sarcastic?
No, that's not a bad... I don't know Did you do the other work yourself?
We lost him.
Oh, okay. Because if he did the wires and the plugs and the cap and the rotor himself, the coil's not a very difficult job at all.
All right, and 2004 obviously is of a vintage that at least you know, you look at the engine, you still know what the parts do.
Yeah, it looks just like yours under the hood, Ray. Same vehicle.
All right, let's take a quick break here. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and we are just warming up this vehicle. We will be back with more of your calls at 800-348-2551. Vox Pop on WAMC. The number to call is 800-348-2551. I'm Ray Graff. We're joined today by Gordon Fricke. We talk automotive maintenance and repair every so often on this program. Always a popular topic. And let's go to Patricia in Woodstock. Patricia.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a 2000 Honda Civic hatchback, and I don't drive it more than once or twice a week, and so that could be part of the problem. But it's been making a squeak when I'm driving on, you know, like a small highway that's kind of curvy. It starts to squeak as I go around curves.
Okay. Sure.
Not a loud squeak, a very soft squeak.
And once you straighten the vehicle out, you're finished with the curve. Is the noise now gone?
Yeah, I think so, mostly. Yeah.
It's probably along the lines of what we spoke about earlier. It's more than likely a corrosion or a rust buildup on your brakes, on your brake rotors, and on that car. You may have drums on the back, but what happens to ferrous metals when they rust is they expand a lot, actually 7 times the original size.
Huh.
So a little bit of rusting puffs up into a big amount, and then that rotor that's spinning around or the brake drum that's turning around is now virtually, it's larger than it used to be, so it taps and hits on stuff that it normally never would. And stressing it through a turn actually makes it bend a little bit and pushes it more towards the outside or inside. So anyway, after all that mumbo jumbo, I think it's probably, I would guess, a corrosion rust issue regarding your brakes.
Will it That's go away if she drives the car?
Sometimes it will wear away, depending on where it is. But if it's in an area that never gets cleaned up by the brake pads, unless it's a piece that falls off, it may not go away. But for a shop to check, it would be pretty routine. When you're on a lift, let's say you need an oil change or some other maintenance, it'd be very easy to get in there with a flashlight and look that whole rotor over and drum and see if there's any big rust sticking out. So that's what I'm thinking.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia. Gordon Fricke is our guest today from Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. Our number here on Vox Pop is 800-348-2551. Kathleen in Bloomington. Kathleen.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a 2013 Volkswagen Beetle.
Okay.
And the check engine light came on, so I went to the shop, and they replaced the evap filter. And I've had it done four times.
Oh, boy. And
after 200 miles, it comes back on.
Yeah. Evap repairs are very difficult and very frustrating for the very reason you're experiencing. Some of them are very hard to confirm the repair when you're done. And I don't know what code you have been getting, if it's the same code every time or not, but it does require some specialized equipment. Some shops don't have it all. I don't have it all. We couldn't handle every make and model that's out there with special equipment. So sometimes those repairs need to go to a dealer or a specialist. But if they're replacing the same thing over and over again, not likely it's failing that many times, and it just they maybe not be able to handle it, you know.
Right. Do
you know what the code was, what the description was when they told you that, or do you?
No, I don't know what the code was.
No. What we see very commonly on cars like yours is there is a purge control valve that the engine brings in the vapors that are stored in the canister that's back by the gas tank. And that purge valve is a very common failure on Volkswagens. It won't seat properly. You'll get a leak. It'll turn the check engine light on. And maybe that's what they've replaced. And if that's the case, then there's a problem elsewhere or a secondary problem, which is always possible. So it may need to go to the dealer or somebody that really specializes in that stuff.
Okay.
All right, Kathleen.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. Just quickly before the next call, Gordon. You know, in my truck, I've had a similar issue with a mass airflow sensor, and I know you've looked at it, and I've replaced it also on my own and cleared the codes. My question is about the code reader. The standard one that you would buy at an auto parts store or wherever, you know, it'll read a fair amount of codes, but clearly there's some issue that it is not reading. If I spent enough money, could I get a really good code reader that would dive deeper into these issues?
Well, the only thing that the professional tools do is they allow you to read data and interrogate sensors and circuits. Mass airflow codes on Nissans, which you've experienced, can be very weird because the computer says there's a mass airflow problem. You read the data, and the data shows that it's okay, but you don't know if there's a glitch that the computer's picking up that you can't see when you're testing it.
Because that's it.
The computer's watching that thing every second the engine is running. where you and I can plug into it and read it for 10 minutes, 5 minutes, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
That, unfortunately, unless you can do a snapshot of what occurred when the code set, which sometimes captures a fault and other times doesn't, you can pull your hair out.
Yeah.
And that's why when you get on these tech lines and forums and the manufacturer has a massive database, you'll find people that have spent 35 hours on that and found some stupid wire connection that intermittently has a problem that fools the computer into saying your mass airflow sensor is bad.
Yes.
But for the normal person to find that could be nearly impossible.
Yeah, well, all right. So I won't spend a fortune on it.
I wouldn't, code no.
reader. All right, fair enough. I'll just I'll take it to a shop. Our number here is 800-348-2551. John in Gilderland. John, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I've got a 2014 Chevy Silverado. About a month ago, I did a brake job on my own. I changed pads and rotors, front and rear. It's got about 82,000 miles on it, and I've never had to do a brake job on it before. So, but now all of a sudden, when I brake, I'm getting a strange vibration. I think it might be coming from the front because I feel more in the steering wheel. Any pointers on where I could start to look for a problem with that?
Yeah, there's two major causes, and one is pretty easy for a lot of people, even some shops, to overlook. Is when you take those rotors off of the hubs, they're usually pretty hard to get off. Did you have to knock them off with a hammer?
Oh, yeah, I had to soak them with WD-40 and then took a rubber mallet. Actually, I'd use the bolts to screw in to pop them away.
So what happened there is the rotor rusted to the hub. And if you don't clean that hub back up perfectly, the buildup of rust on that hub, when you bolt your new rotor on, you're bolting it on slightly crooked. So that pulsation will be there and get worse because the rotor is in effect wobbling because you don't have it bolted perfectly flush to that hub. So you might be able to take the rotors back off and find out that there's rust behind there, quite a bit of it. And if you scrape and sand and get that all clean and make sure there's nothing stuck to the rotor, and we coat those surfaces with a product called fluid film, so if we're ever the people that do it again, the rotor comes off this time, that could be your entire problem. The other thing is you might have a defective brake rotor, and you'll never determine which of the two it is. And if you purchase the rotors from a auto parts supplier that offers a warranty, they'll give you new ones without any questions. So you could do that too. You could get two new rotors, and when you change them, make sure the rust is perfectly clean from those hubs, lube them, and put them back together, and I got a feeling that's going to end your problem.
John, thanks a lot for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest today. It's Automotive Maintenance and Repair, and our number is 800-348-2551. Rick in Sturbridge, Mass. Rick.
Well, Gordon, you've impressed me a few times, and I'm going to throw you one that's giving me a problem. I'm looking at replacing my 2010 Nissan Cube blower resistor, and I'm just wondering, because I can't locate it, I won't go into a long story, I'm just wondering if you are familiar with replacing the blower resistor a Cube.
Well, so we have a few Cubes in the area, and I don't know specifically, but a lot of the what you used to consider to be the conventional blower motor resistor is now a module. How many do you have? Do you have any distinct speeds? How many speeds are on that fan?
Four. I do own the resistor, and it's only high that's blowing now. So everything I've read said that when the lower three kick off, it's just bypassing the resistor and it's
correct.
Running.
Yes, that usually, it resorts to speed high, which is direct 12-volt voltage, no drop. So that car must have a conventional old-school resistor then. They're usually almost always located very, very close to the blower motor. Have you already tried to find it?
Passenger side on my Nissan Pathfinder. It's on the by the passenger front seat. I've done that one myself.
Yeah, I appreciate your blessing on that, but no, I pulled the glove box. I've done yoga under the steering column, everything. I've also have this schematic from the Nissan dealership that sold me the piece.
Hmm. Yep.
And there's supposed to be a pigtail wire coming off behind the fan blower control knobs on the on the cabin side, and I cannot trace anything. It's just dead back there. It's driving me nuts. So I was just hoping that maybe you did the job once and you know where it's located. But
I've replaced lots of them, but not on a cube to tell you exactly where it is.
Yep.
How about the internet? Have you done any searches on that?
Oh, constant.
Yeah.
And one guy said that the 2010 is the worst one to find the thing. But I've come across a lot of differences. Unfortunately, it's the jute that the videos on YouTube show. And that's a beauty because you just pull the glove box out and it's right there. And it's like two screws and you pull it out like a letter out of an envelope.
Yeah.
And I had my wife up there, too, to her consternation. And she knows what she's looking at because we have the part to replace it with. And we just can't find it. And it can't be way up underneath the dashboard.
I don't think it's in some obscure spot, but... space allocation is a big problem on cars today, but that's such a fairly conventional setup, underneath there where I guess the only thing I could do is have you search, YouTube videos or question it on the internet, and maybe a dealer would be able to tell you where it's located. A lot of times they don't really give you out any information, but if you call the dealer that you purchased the part from, they would be obligated to tell you where it's located.
Is the Nissan Cube a little car? I'm not familiar with this one.
It looks like a Scion XB, kind of like, It's like a box.
Oh, okay. So like a Bulgarian taxi or something like that.
And it's an asymmetric back window. If you look at it, the window's not a symmetrical window. It's not...
well,
rectangular. It's kind of weird.
I know that you've done the glove box, but in my 2011 Pathfinder, it's not in the glove box, but it's on the passenger side, sort of underneath, near the center console. And it was, you got to reach under there, but you can get it out. It's only a couple screws.
I pulled everything out there. I pulled the console out, and I can find one male plug, but it's facing forward. So you'd have to remove the whole dash, and it is not centered on the module it's plugging into. So even that isn't the right spot. It's blowing my mind. I just can't figure it out. I'll probably bring it to a dealer.
So annoying.
Because I don't think my mechanic will spend, I think it'll spend more time than me trying to find it.
Well, I'm sorry you can't find it. That sounds like a puzzle.
All right, Rick. Well, thanks a lot. We appreciate it, man. 800-348-2551 is our number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. And let's see here. Looks like Mary and Rensselaer. Mary, you're on.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call. I'm sure these questions you'll be able to answer very quickly. My first question, I have a 2015 Toyota Prius V as in Victor. And every year I go to Florida. I've had the car for now 3 years. When I leave for Florida, I put a trickle charge on the 12-volt battery. And my first question is over time, is that going to damage that battery, or is it going to reduce the lifespan of it by doing that each year?
Actually, it's good for it. What you should get is a battery tender. And they monitor the voltage and only top it up when necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's really, that's the only thing you can do for an out-of-service battery.
Okay. All right. Took me a while to find the battery, but once I did and got everything hooked up, I just crossed my fingers, but it seems to be working fine. So that's good. The other question that I had has to do with the door lock on the driver's side door. And every once in a while, it just locks me out, and I cannot open the door. I can't use, it doesn't work with the key fob, either one of them. It doesn't, usually it will unlock when I touch the handle. but it doesn't. Every other lock, every other door will unlock for me, but the driver's side will not.
Well, that's not good.
And I've had it to the dealership twice. Well, for other problems, but while I was there, I mentioned this issue to them. They've looked at it. They can't duplicate it. I have gone on YouTube and searched, and I did find some things on YouTube that said that this is kind of a problem with Toyotas. It's the actuator switch, I guess, and the fix is to just to tear the whole door apart and replace it, and then that's not even a guarantee. So have you had experience with that?
Not specifically, but, you know, we do run into a lot of lock issues. And when you first described the vehicle, there was a distraction. I couldn't exactly – I don't remember the year, make, and model of the car. What was it again?
It's a Toyota Prius 2015. It's okay. The V model, V as in Victor.
Yep. The only thing you can do – and it's – everybody can and should do this periodically is lubricate all of your door latches, hood, trunk, all the doors. And you can spray a penetrating oil in there like WD-40, something with a nozzle. And sometimes those mechanisms will jam up in there. And there's also micro switches in those latches that tell the module, the body control module, what position your door is in, open, shut, or locked, and those micro switches can get jammed up, and the computer doesn't know if your door is open or shut, or if it's locked or unlocked, and it does the wrong thing. So do that. Get a can of WD-40 and spray that latch. In other words, when you open up the door, that mechanism that latches your door shut, you can spray it liberally. It doesn't hurt anything, and, you know, other than you might have to wipe up the excess, but soak every single one of them. And depending on how your door handle operates, you can spray through the outside to into the door and spray everything that works in there. And then just exercise the door 10 or 15 times. And you can do that at every door and just see what that does.
All right, Mary, thanks a lot. Quickly, let's go before our next break to Jeff in Agawam, and you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hey, Ray and Gordon, thanks for taking my phone call.
Sure.
I have a 2013 Nissan Altima, and I've heard horror stories about the CVT transmission. Got about 39,000 miles, and I've heard around 65,000 miles, they tend to start breaking apart. Is that something I should be concerned about?
2013.
To 2013.
And Gordon, okay. The CVT is continuously variable. What is that?
Yes. Yep. Continuously variable or constant variable transmission.
Right.
So no gear changes, no shifting. You don't feel that, you know, that bump from gear to gear up and down. It's essentially a set of variable pulleys with a meshed, like a belt in between them. If anybody is a snowmobiler, it's the same basic transmission, but it's internal with oil instead of outside in the air. And they work fine for recreational vehicles, ATV, snowmobiles. They actually started out life in industry, so you could change speeds infinitely. Car manufacturers thought they'd be a great idea, which they are. But they started out on very rocky territory, and most of the car makers brought them out about 15 years ago, 10 years ago, and most of them had very bad results and stopped them, and now they're back again. Nissan had their share of issues. By the year of your car, they may be ironed out okay.
Apparently
I've got
not.
A transmission shop that I you know talk to and bring cars up periodically, and after about 100,000 miles on an older CVT Nissan, you could be on thin ice.
Okay.
They don't all fail that soon. Some fail sooner. Some fail last much longer.
Okay.
I don't know if I'd be petrified of it, but it would be of concern, that's for sure.
All right, Jeff, we got to take a break here, but thank you for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. We'll check the email bag and get back to the phones in a moment. It's Vox Pop. Ray Graff with you, 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's cars today. And before we get to the emails here, Gordon, you know, I watch TV sometimes at night, and I see this commercial. I know you're a Volkswagen guy, and you have a beautiful old Volkswagen bus in the window of your shop. I see this Volkswagen bus, and I don't remember what the commercial is. It's a, you know, it could be a vitamin or a pantyhose, or I don't know what. I'm transfixed by this Volkswagen bus, and it's got a top that opens up like an accordion and gives you some living space. Is that an aftermarket thing, or did Volkswagen do that in the 60s and 70s?
How old of a vehicle do you think, Ray? As old as the one I have, or a little bit newer?
I would peg it late 60s, but I wouldn't be sure. I couldn't be sure.
Yeah, so what they did is they took these buses and sent them to a company called Westphalia. And I think Westphalia is the actual town that they're in, but they took the bus and did the camper conversion. And that pop-top roof was part of it.
That's so cool.
So it is a factory-authorized, factory-warrantied. It's all under the same, you know, umbrella, but it was a separate company that did the camper work, and they did do those pop-top roofs.
What a brilliant idea. All right, this email came in from Laura. Laura says, I bought a 2020 Chevy Colorado ZR2 in July, took it in for an oil change and for its first service. Lately, when I start the truck and back it out of the driveway, it's fine. As soon as I put it in drive, there was a huge hesitation. I can drive it 20 more times that day. It won't happen again. This happens every single day. Any ideas?
Well, it's a pretty new vehicle. Doesn't say the mileage on it anywhere,
no.
Does it?
Nope.
No. This is what is becoming a chronic issue in the industry, but that vehicle's a bit young for this.
It's a 2020.
Yeah. Carbon buildup on the intake valves and on the fuel injector tips and inside the engine on the pistons can happen in as little as, 8,000 to 10,000 miles. So she could conceivably at 2020 have plenty of miles on it already.
Yep.
If you are not using top tier gas and doing very, very bad driving, when I say bad driving, I mean
start and stop,
idle, no highway, no hard acceleration, no high-speed cruise.
Right.
This carbon buildup piles up pretty fast in some cases, and it shows up the worst after a cold start.
Oh, yeah.
Starts badly cold, it doesn't run quite right, runs a little ragged, gives you issues until it hits operating temperature, and then the vehicle runs pretty good after that.
Yeah. So what do you do?
That would be a concern if this owner is not using what's called top tier gas.
Can you put some the stuff that we use, the Tecron or something else, and clear it out?
You can. However, the Tecron now doesn't clean up the valves anymore because most vehicles now have the fuel injectors directly in the combustion chambers, and it doesn't spray the valves clean anymore. So it's a whole new set of problems.
Ouch. All right. Yeah. Well, I assume there must be something that you can get at the auto parts store that you could add and maybe get to that, right?
Not much.
Wow.
But the stuff in the tank, the Tecron, is going to help the injectors and the pistons. If it's a buildup on the valves, sometimes the only method to clean them is to do it physically or with a walnut shell blasting equipment, and it's a lot of work.
Wow. All right, this one is from E. E says, my 2000 Chevy S10's four-wheel drive makes a howling sound after quick acceleration or coming to speed over 60 miles an hour. I can pull over, shift into neutral, shift into four-wheel low or high, then back again. It'll be fine until tripped again. Should I have it looked at before the snow flies, or is this just an irritation?
I would have it looked at. Maybe it's not coming out of four-wheel drive when he's selecting it to be out.
Yeah.
And if it's got a ton of miles on it, there could be some drivetrain wear there that's becoming a problem.
All right. This one is from Doreen, and then we'll get back to the phones. Doreen writes, I have a 2011 Honda CR-V, had a fender bender back in January. The car was in the body shop for 2 months, and then, boom, COVID struck. I cannot leave the doors locked without the alarm sounding off at any intermittent time. No pattern to this. So for now, just leaving the doors unlocked. Any suggestions other than disconnecting the battery or bringing it back to the shop? And that's Doreen's email to you.
Yeah, that's a pain in the neck there.
You betcha.
The alarm can go off when the battery voltage gets too low because the computer gets freaked out. And if the car has been driven that infrequently or poorly, state of charge of the battery indoor condition would be something for sure to be concerned with. But yeah, if there's no resolution there, definitely bring it back because you can't live with that alarm going crazy all the time.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Yeah. All right, well, let's go back to the phones and we go to Chuck. Chuck, where are you calling from?
Snowbird Lake, New York.
All right. Well, you are on the air with Gordon Fricke.
Hi. Every time I turn on the television, and about three times a day, I get robocalls trying to sell me an extended warranty. Have you any thoughts on these extended warranties? It sounds like a ripoff to me, but
It certainly is. It's absolutely out of control. Everybody's getting these calls, and I love getting them. I got one just yesterday, the day before. It rang like I was here at 6. It rang. I said, I'm going to see who this is because it's an unrecognizable number. And it was somebody in a room where you could hear other people talking. So it's probably a boiler room. And the question was, our records indicate that your warranty is about to expire or already has, and this will be our final call. We've reached out to you, and this is your final chance to get an extended warranty. If you'd like to hear about it, press 1. So I pressed 1.
Uh-oh.
I'm sorry, the first part was a recording. Press 1, I get the voice, I hear all the people in the background. And I said, yes, thank you for calling. I've been trying to get a warranty in this car for so long. And the voice, the person said, well, tell me the year, make, and model. So I said, it's a 1974 Chevrolet El Camino. And there was a big pause on the other end of the line because they're not used to hearing that. And the person said, do you have any newer vehicles? I said, yeah, I do. And I said, 1987 Volkswagen Scirocco. Bang, they hung up on me. They are scams. Do not buy an extended warranty over the phone.
All right, then that's Gordon Fricke, not WAMC, just in case someone sues us.
Yeah, right.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Sharon in North Greenbush. Sharon, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I have kind of an acute situation going on here of an 2005 Audi A4. And when I started the car up this morning, I heard a bit of a screeching, like almost it sounded like your power steering belt or something. But I recently had the valve cover gasket replaced maybe a couple, 3 weeks ago. And today driving back on the highway, my coolant light came on. I had to pull over, and most of my coolant is gone. I managed to get it to a parts place, put the coolant in, drove another 5 miles to home, and I get it home, and it's like smoking.
Oh, my God.
So
dead silence there.
Yeah. That's not good.
I guess the only thing you can really do is get it back to the shop. How long ago was the valve cover done? Just recently?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago. And I haven't had a problem like until today. And I really, you know, I thought it was cold and when I heard that belt going and I drove it up an hour and then it was no problem. And it rested for a couple hours. And on the way home, it just.
Yeah, it could be totally unrelated because there's not a lot of coolant in the way of that valve cover, but it all depends on there could be a weak point, there could be a coolant pipe or a hose in there. It could be something entirely unrelated, but you definitely don't want to be driving that car or any car with a coolant leak because if the engine does overheat, it gets too hot, it can do severe damage. You know, you can warp the cylinder head, the gasket blows, and that's the end of it. You wouldn't spend the thousands of dollars to fix it at that point probably.
Yikes.
So I put about a half a bottle in, and it's already back down.
Oh my God.
To where I started.
I'm having flashbacks to my Cadillacs. Don't talk about it. I ended up with 2 blown head gaskets and 2 different Cadillacs.
PTSD.
Exactly.
So my question is, can I safely drive it 5 miles to the garage to work on it?
it's hard for me to say, because if your leak is rapid enough, that 5 miles could overheat you.
Yeah.
You know? Do you have AAA or any of the, do you have a towing,
of
any towing
not,
clubs?
No.
No.
It might be worth the 5 mile tow. I got to be honest with you. You do not want to open that can of worms if you haven't already.
No. An overheated engine can be the end of the car if it's, you know, the right or the wrong engine, you know.
Yeah, and I've had them, yes.
Well, is it already at the end if it was bubbling and hissing and smoking?
Okay. Well, you never know. You don't know if any damage occurred until you fix the cooling system and then refill it, bleed it, and then operate the engine. You don't know till you fix the leak if there's any damage, so I wouldn't risk more damage. And again, I don't know. You could go that 5 miles and never get that warm, but
yeah,
you just have to be on the safe side, really.
Oh, boy. Sharon, I'm praying for
you. Okay, so, yeah, and this was a non-Audi deal or anything. Otherwise, I'd be thousands of dollars in the...
Right.
But, he, you know, this guy's worked on other Audis.
Yeah.
In a car that age, you certainly could have a coolant leak pop up. Yeah. You know, unexpectedly at any time, regardless of whether the, you know, valve cover got changed or not. Unfortunately, coincidental or things fail at bad times, and sometimes human nature is, it's got to be something they did.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, fair enough.
Sharon, good luck. Thanks a lot for the call. And Catherine in Atwood. Catherine, you're on.
Oh, hi. I didn't think I'd get in. Hi. I'm having to car shop, which is something I loathe to do. I'm one of these people that drives it until it becomes unsafe, unreliable, or more expensive to repair than to replace. And so I was either looking at, like, the 2015 Volkswagen diesels that have been brought up to speed, or a hybrid. Now, I don't know much about hybrids, and I was wondering if you could kind of give me a primer on, you know, like, can you control when it switches from gas to electric? Do you still have to plug it in at night? Like, you know, that kind of thing.
I like that.
Right.
Good question.
Yep. So diesels are becoming less and less popular in the world in cars. You're going to still see them in trucks and trains and buses and things like that. But as far as automobiles go, they're on their way out. So I think I would avoid one. In terms of if you keep cars forever and you have this diesel for 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years from now, it might be getting hard to keep it going. Hybrids, there's different versions. Plug-in hybrid, which uses more electric. Conventional hybrid, which is gas engine, batteries, and an electric motor. Those you don't plug in. Do some research.
Engine recharges the electrical batteries. Hybrid.
Yeah, a non-plug-in hybrid is self-contained, so it has a gas engine, and you don't plug it in, and it takes care of everything. The batteries have a lifespan, so if you're shopping for a used one, the target age of the batteries was around 10 years. They tend to be lasting longer, but if you have, let's say, a Prius that's 12 years old and you need batteries, it ends up being quite expensive, to the tune of maybe $3,000 to $4,000, and that's bad news at that age of the car.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to wait.
Be shopping for a new one if I was buying a hybrid.
Yeah, yeah, and then you just need to really see what suits you better in terms of if you want to be plugging it in and what your style of driving is. For some people, the hybrid doesn't really pan out to any greater economy than another small economical car, depending on the type of driving you do. So, you know, there's some research involved there.
I live in Ulster County, and you really don't have city driving or very, very, very little of it, but you don't truly have highway driving either. Mm. Most of your driving is done on two-lane roads where the speed limit might be 55, but chances are you're not going to get to do 55, you know. But you move along. It's not city driving either. And
I had a customer years ago that had some hybrids, and the type of driving that these cars were receiving for this business made it so they did not offer any savings in terms of gasoline usage, maintenance, and all that over the period of time they owned the vehicles. But the owner wanted to contribute to an economical standpoint of the planet. and that's why they chose to go with the hybrids. But the guy doing the books pretty much said it's about a wash. Okay. If you had not gotten a hybrid and used a conventional gas engine.
Well, Catherine, thanks a lot. Now, we only have about 45 seconds here, and I apologize, but Glenn has been waiting over a half an hour. Glenn in New Windsor, if you can make it really fast, we'll get to Gordon here. Hello, Glenn.
Sure.
Hello?
Hi.
Go ahead.
I've got a 2016 Odyssey. Okay, great. I've got a 2016 Odyssey. It has that VCM system. I've heard that there are problems with it, high mileage vehicles with this VCM system.
Yeah.
Foul plugs, bad engine mounts, oil usage.
We're about out of time, so you got to make it really fast.
I wanted to hear your thought.
Okay, go ahead, Gordon. Give it 15 seconds.
Well, you know, Honda makes great stuff, and I see them with tremendously high mileage. I don't see that system is a big, big problem, but my advice would be to get professional eyes on it, so if it looks like you're headed for a major uphill battle, you can make a decision on what to do with the vehicle.
All right, well, Glenn, we'll have to leave it there. Gordon Fricke, splendid job, sir. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Yeah, thanks for having me on the phone today.
Yeah, maybe someday you'll be back in the studio.
Yeah.
We're hoping. Enjoy the driving, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Support comes from Pelham Auto Service, Route 9 at the Amherst-Belchertown line. Currently open during normal business hours. Curbside service for all to stay safe and healthy during this time. Worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com. And Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany, Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, accepting new clients, Careers in Transition, LLC.com. Thanks again to the great Gordon Fricke for being here. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered by Jordan Yuxall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's the gardening show. Stand by for 51%.